Hello, I'm Veronica Scaresbrick. Thanks for joining me. The 19th of March marks the feast of St. Joseph, so why not ask the former Auxiliary Bishop of Liverpool, Vincent Malone, to shine the spotlight on this familiar figure. I was just curious to know a little bit more about St. Joseph, because he's a figure that we don't speak about a lot here in Italy anyway. I don't know about England. We speak about Our Lady, and St. Joseph seems to be linked to her somehow.
I suppose that's because the only biblical references we have, and we've no other source of knowing much about St. Joseph, are those that link him with Our Lady. In fact, only in two of the Gospels does he appear at all, St. Matthew's particularly, where four times he says that Joseph responded to dreams that directed him how he was to behave. So I think our knowledge is very restricted. And popular devotion, of course, often fills in the gaps. St. Luke makes reference to him only as the spouse of Mary.
How do you believe we should then relate to him as Catholics?
Well, I suppose his responsiveness to the Word of God as he understood it is the big thing that we're given about him. All right, he's the protector of Mary and the Holy Family. He's given that job to do. And as the theologians say, if God gives you a job to do, he gives you the grace to do it. So we assume that Joseph is given those extraordinary blessings of the Lord to enable him to be the protector of the child Jesus and the Holy Family. And from that, I suppose, it becomes very natural that he's invited, as it were, to be the patron of the universal church, even though that comes many centuries later. So how are we to regard him? First of all, as someone who's given great responsibility and therefore great gifts commensurate with that responsibility. And secondly, as somebody who is always attentive to the word of the Lord. It's quite extraordinary if you read St. Matthew's Gospel how he moves at each stage under the influence of that apparently direct word. Yes, it's put in the context of a dream, but for Joseph certainly it's an injunction. First of all, that he is to take Mary to his home, despite the uncertain circumstances in which he finds himself, and then to take her and the child to Egypt, and then to go back to Israel, and then when he gets back to Israel, Judah, he's told, no, not there, but Galilee, where it started off. So four times in the space of, well, one chapter in St. Matthew, you get Joseph being almost directed by God into his and the particular aspects of his great responsibility.
So he said yes to God as well?
Yes, indeed, all the time. I think that's perhaps the most significant thing about him, apart from, you know, the general sense of devotion to someone who's given such a task, that he is attuned, as it were, to the will of God and changes his plans readily or creates his plans readily in response to that call.
Now, when you speak about St. Joseph to people, to the faithful in church, how do you think they relate to him? It's an easy relationship, isn't it? I mean, he's a sort of father figure in a way, isn't he?
Yes. Apart from, well, they would probably say, well, he was a carpenter, wasn't he? We're not quite sure what that means, an artisan of some kind. Some people conclude from that he lived a fairly impoverished life. And others say, no, to be a carpenter in that time was a skilled task, and he must have been a middle-class sort of family father. So plenty of room for speculation, but the key fact that his job, his earthly job, as far as we can understand it, was to be the mainstay of the Holy Family. And I guess that for most people, they don't think of Joseph apart from the Holy Family. They don't think of, well, what did he do on his day off or when he wasn't with the Holy Family? We haven't any idea of that. Some lovely pictures of imagination. One lovely statue at the seminary at Up Holland in this part of the world where St. Joseph is the patron, and it stood at the main entrance there for many years until circumstances changed. And it's Joseph with a teenage son standing beside him, you know, or perhaps a 12-year-old or something like that. And thinking of Joseph responsible for those very hidden stages of the Lord's own development is quite unique. It's a story of the hidden life which we're not told in any detail, but it's right for devotion to embellish and to consider, well, if that's the way that the Lord comes into our world, then the provision for him to do so in a natural way, in a way that we can relate to, has a very important character in it, besides our Blessed Lady, and that is St. Joseph.
In Italy, there's a huge devotion to St. Joseph, and the 19th of March is often a holiday. In villages, they have particular markets, and I suppose because it coincides with spring, in a sense, here. Do you have that sort of popular devotion in England as well?
Not in an extreme form. It is a solemnity, a major feast. But in the Universal Church, I think it's offered as one of the holy days of obligation, which it isn't observed in this country. There are two feasts, of course, the main one being the one you've mentioned, the 19th of March. But then he's also honored on the 1st of May, which is a more recent feast, to give a focus, I suppose, to Workers' Day. That was only in Pius XII's time that the 1st of May was made into the Feast of St. Joseph the Worker, and underlined as the patronage of those who, I suppose, they're living by manual labour.
Which goes back to what you were saying earlier about him being a carpenter, or seen as a carpenter anyway.
Yeah. It's hard to estimate, you know, what is devotion, but I suppose the fact that it's a very popular name still, you know, that many boys will be called Joseph, despite the inroads of more contemporary heroes, I suppose indicates some residual devotion to that Joseph.
And of course, our Pope's name is Joseph.
Joseph Ratzinger, yes, yes.
You mentioned artwork and Joseph appears, but he always appears with the Holy Family, doesn't he? He doesn't appear on his own.
And
Or not much, anyway.
No, not much. I think it'd be a major research to see whether it ever happened. But I doubt if one would see him alone, because his relationship with the whole family is the whole of his context, isn't it? I'd be surprised not to see a statue of St. Joseph in most Catholic churches, certainly around here. Sometimes I suppose he would be just standing with might be some of the carpenter's tools, or even with a lily associated with him in heraldic purity of soul and body. But yes, much more commonly as part of the Holy Family. And of course, in the Second Vatican Council, in the very early stages, when the council had been sitting for three or four sessions and there was no tangible outcome, apart from the fact that the Holy Father had decreed that in the Roman canon, the only one we had at the time, the name of St. Joseph should be inserted, it seemed like 4 years hard work to achieve that very small addition to our liturgy. But perhaps it was a straw in the wind. And of course, as time has unfolded and the Vatican Council has seen as a seismic change in the attitude of the Church on so many things. But that was the first fruit, actually, the first small fruit of the Second Vatican Council, that the name of St. Joseph was added to the Roman canon. So you ask, you know, what is his popularity? You wouldn't have to say to somebody, what do you think of St. Joseph? Never heard of him. I mean, sorry, they wouldn't say to you, never heard of him. They might say, it doesn't matter to me. But you could think of many other names. They say, I've never even heard the name. So he'd be well-known, well-loved. But the embroidery of devotion is overlaying only those few simple facts that we have about him in the Bible itself and from nowhere else.
And a big thank you there to the former Auxiliary Bishop of Liverpool, Vincent Malone, for taking the time to share with us these thoughts. Thanks for listening. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick.